Meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome. And welcome to the Small Team EPDP Scope Composition Call taking place on Friday, the 6th of July, 2018. On the call today, we have Keith Drazik, Donna Austin, Paul McGrady, Susan Kawaguchi, and Stephanie Perrin. A list of apologies from Caitlin Tubergen. From staff, we have Marika Koning, Natalie Peregrin, and myself, Carrie Agnew. I would like to remind all today's meeting is being recorded, and to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes. With this, I'll turn it back over to Marika to go ahead and kick us off. Or perhaps Donna. Sorry, I forgot to ask.
I'm not really sure if it's supposed to be handed over to me. I don't think a lead has been appointed, but I'm happy to hand it over to Donna if you want to, Donna, or if someone else wants to, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Marika. So it's Donna. To Keith, Paul, Stephanie, and Susan.
Go ahead,
I'm on this call primary. Yes, thanks, Marika. I'm on this call really to represent leadership. So Keith, Paul, Stephanie, and Susan, I'm not sure how you want to run this call. I think as Terry's identified, there's two issues we want to try to, resolve. The first is composition. And I think, not to pick on you, Paul, but I think the outstanding issue is, we've got agreement from the NCSG and CSG and most of the others on representation, but the IPC has some concerns about the numbers. So I think that's the first issue. And then the second is, the scoping effort, which is has a few more stumbling blocks to it. So I'm not sure how you want to kick this off. I'm happy to manage a queue if you want me to do that. But really, it's up to the four of you, however you want to do it.
I'm sorry, Keith. You raised your hand. You're being polite. I'll be quiet.
Thanks, Paul. I'm happy to defer to you, but I guess since I was the holder of the pen initially on this membership structure question, maybe I could sort of tee up for our continued discussion where we are. So as I sent to the list, a fairly detailed bullet point or numbered analysis of sort of my expectations and understanding is that, we're trying to keep the group small, manageable, and efficient, focused. And obviously, we've seen quite a bit of traffic over the last week coming out of Panama about the need for balance between the GNSO structure. Some of the initial conversations that we had in Panama were about breaking down the participation at the sea level, right? And we heard, from NCSG at that point that they didn't want to be broken down by the sea level. But we didn't increase the numbers accordingly, so they essentially ended up with three instead of six in the template. But I think the open question here today is understanding that this parity question in terms of representation between commercial stakeholder group and non-commercial stakeholder group, which is I think where the rub is here, is sort of the open question. My understanding from NCSG, and Stephanie, feel free to jump in here, at some point, is that this is a very, very important and critical issue in order to maintain the balance between the two parts of the non-contracted party house. So as such, we've had a proposal from Marie in the BC, also supported by ISPCP. I think the registries and registrars are on board. I think there's been positive signals from the non-commercial side that the proposed structure of six each, essentially between CSG and NCSG, is sort of like the path forward. This is obviously a challenging situation. There are different views on each side, but in my view, this is the compromise path forward. And so I took some heat for those that saw the blog post that Internet Governance Project put out, both personally and sort of calling me out, not being playing fair. So I'm a bit sensitive about sort of you know, where we are on this and the need for us to come together and to, you know, finalize a path forward. And I think what has been proposed, again, as I said, by Marie from the BC, seems like a reasonable compromise to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Case, Paul, did you want to go ahead?
Sure. So I'm trying to find the section in the charter where we deal with consensus, how the chair senses consensus. We were talking about beefing that up, but that seems to have fallen by the wayside in lieu of a numerical solution here. Does anybody know specifically where that's at?
Yeah, this is Paul. This is Keith. Just to respond quickly, on the document that's on the screen, if you scroll down to the bottom of that first page, it actually starts. It's one of the last bullets that starts for the purpose of assessing consensus, and I think the proposal there was to change the word "shall" in the later part of that sentence to "must."
Trying to find it.
Paul.
So there's proposed.
Okay,
I'm here. Sorry, I'm just trying to. This document, you know, been hard to having it busted up into five different things, and all this other stuff has proven to be challenging. What's the I guess. Is it before the big chart?
And this is Marika. If I can just note that what is up there, what is up on the screen?
Go ahead, Marika. Unless we've lost Marika. Okay, are you actually in the agenda?
Sorry, I think I may have some delay on the. Oh, I think I may have some delay on my line.
Yeah, so I guess from my point of view, essentially, we have to basically we're being asked to have two instead of three people represent the IPC point of view. I don't think that there are anybody would say that this is not going to be a lot of hard work. So, you know, essentially we're being asked to, you know, the NCSG has, you know, two Cs, each of which have three. You know, that's not through any fault of the IPC. In fact, this bizarre structure has been a point of contention for us for years and years now. So essentially we're being asked to weigh a, you know, lift a heavier lift here, even though we're at the same time being assured that the number of people we have participating won't affect how consensus is drawn. Apparently, the people who are pushing for us to be understaffed on this really don't believe that, or else they wouldn't care, except for the benefits of having us understaffed. So I think we need to focus less on the numbers because, you know, at the end of the day, we're standing alone, and I'm not sure that this is something that, you know, there are certainly things in here that would elicit a no vote, but I'm not sure that this is the one. I'm trying to read this on the little screen. Let me see if I can blow it up a little bit. So maybe we can just beef up. So for the purpose of assessing consensus and in order to reflect and respect the current balance and bicameral structure of the GENISO Council, the chair shall apply necessary and appropriate weight to the positions of the respective GENISO groups, noting that increased membership from the CSG and NCSG relative to the CPH upsets the balance, which is kind of funny because each of the parties in the contracted parties house each have three, the IPC will have two. So I'm not exactly sure what what increased membership we're experiencing as compared to the others, but that seems to be enshrined here. And then the CPH and CSP, whatever, that don't fulfill their membership allowance will be disadvantaged. So I guess it comes down, we can keep the language in here where it claims that the CPH has less representation. It's sort of Orwellian, but fine. I guess we needed to define what genus so groups means, because we'll no doubt be having this, this discussion later on. Does genus so group mean, what does it mean? Does it mean at the constituency level? Because obviously in the discussion around the numbers of the participants, the business constituency and the ISPs have a different view on, on this issue. There'll be different views on other issues. How do we define genus or groups? Can we put, can we make it explicit that that means down to the constituency level? Or are we going to get lumped in for consensus purposes with the stakeholder group that we like our housemates very much, but we don't always see eye to eye, which is one of the reasons why we're having this conversation.
Case, go ahead.
Thanks, Tom. This is Keith Drazik. Yeah, thanks very much, Paul. I agree that maybe some of the language in that section needs to be edited a bit. Like one of the proposals, I think, like I said, was the chair shall apply necessary and appropriate weight. Maybe the answer is to add must. I do think your question about the groups question is a good one. Marika has suggested in chat that it could be clarified as GNSO, SGs, and Cs at the council level. I think that's reasonable. I think it's important to continue to note that essentially the registries and registrars would have three each, and the CSG and NCSG would have six each. And I think it's important to note that for the purposes of assessing consensus. But, my view on this is either we have consensus or more work needs to be done. And ideally, this group, as we talked about in Panama, should not be voting, not be polling. It's a question of focusing on the issues and the work that's outstanding to be able to reach consensus. The vote is supposed to happen at the council level, and that's where it belongs. So I hope that's helpful. But, Paul, I do want to thank you for your acknowledgement and constructive, path forward here.
And I think Marika's proposed change, clarifying it as GNSO, SGs, and can we have and Cs instead of slash Cs at council level? That way it's clear that we're being clear that those are SGs or not Cs. But with that change, I think that's fine. And then let's just declare this duck fully broiled and move on to the scope.
This is Marika, and I hope you can hear me now better with less delay. I just wanted to flag that the document you see on the screen has incorporated some of the conversation that happened yesterday. I did flag two specific questions that helpful clarifying, because my assumption is, if there's indeed agreement, at least on the composition, this is probably something that can be shared then with the full drafting team for their review. But two questions I called out and I just wanted to get a clarification on was, first of all, is the understanding that if SOs and ACs decide to appoint members, that those members would also be expected to represent positions of their appointing organization, similar to GNSO members. Another point I observed here, that there's a reference to an abstention during a consensus call. I just wanted to clarify, in at least a GNSO voting world, an abstention is counted as a no vote. Is that the intention here, or is the intention that it basically would not count if someone doesn't express a viewpoint? And it may just be helpful to be specific about that, so there's no confusion in that regard.
K,
Chase, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Donna. Thanks, Marika. So I think the first question that you posed about SOAC members, participants, observers, liaisons, whatever we're going to call them, I think is still an open question that we should talk about today, because I have had questions come up, you know, as to whether these groups should be, you know, observers, liaisons, you know, whether the CCMSO, you know, should have a liaison or, you know, be a member. I just think this is something that we ought to talk through a little bit more here on this call, because I feel like there's an open question as to the nature of participation of the SOs and ACs. We know that the GAC wants to participate. The GAC is participating currently in the subsequent procedures work track 5 PDP, so there's precedent for that. I think the question is, and I guess that's probably true of ALAC as well and CCMSO in the subsequent procedures engagement on that work track 5 geographic names issue. So I just think that we need to make sure that we're on the same page here, at least as a small group, as to what we want as it relates to their participation and the nature of that participation. You know, whether the number of 3111 is correct or whether we want more parity, you know, in terms of the number. So sorry to go on a little bit about that. And then, Marika, on your second point, so I don't forget it, my recommendation would be that we would I think one of the concerns that we were trying to avoid with this language is that if, for example, the GAC could not reach consensus but was a contributing member of the group, that their lack of ability to reach consensus would not be an obstacle for the rest to reach consensus, if that makes sense. So maybe we can talk that through a little bit more. I'll be quiet now. Thank you. I think Paul has his hand up, and then Susan has his hand up. So,
yeah.
Paul, why don't we go to you?
Yeah,
so this is Paul. I have much more narrow comment, which is I think that the default setting of an abstention being no is sort of a weird council thing. I don't think that we should extend that to the working group. I think if somebody doesn't feel strongly one way or the other, or it's not permitted by their sponsor group to opine one way or the other, that it should just be considered as a zero on the scale of negative one or positive one. And that way we don't end up with, you know, poor attendance, something as mundane as poor attendance, crashing the ship, even though the ship was fully prepared to dock safely. Thanks.
So this is Susan. On the first comment, and good question, Marika, and thank you, as always, for getting to the nitty-gritty and making sure that we cross all the T's and dot all the I's. In my opinion, that if we are holding the SGs and the Cs to represent their membership, then we should hold the other, the SOs and ACs, to the same thing. If they cannot do that, then, you know, and this is to be blunt, that's their problem. So therefore, if they cannot weigh in on consensus because they cannot get an answer from their community, then they may not be included in that consensus call. Also, on your second comment, once again, we're not voting in a PDP, and I think we need to be very sensitive to that. So therefore, if we are not voting in a PDP, we're just stating our level of agreement, then the abstention becomes mute. I don't think that is, you know, it sort of, You're either weighing in or you're not, in my opinion, is how it should work in a PDP. So, I definitely do not want to be in the situation that if somebody does not weigh in, that becomes a no vote. It doesn't make sense to me. So maybe we need to clean up this language and remove abstention.
Thanks, Susan. It's Donna. So I agree that perhaps getting rid of the abstention language might be helpful. And one of the things as well, you know, if you've got two or three members that are participating as part of an SG or C, then one would hope that at least one of the representatives is available for any consensus call. But I kind of understand the point that do we need to call out what happens if you're not available during a consensus call? So Paul says he's okay with deleting the concept, as Susan should suggest. I guess the question is whether we need to address it at all or whether we just take it out. Does that still leave an open question? I think it's probably fair just to take it out. Keith or Stephanie, do you have a view? This is specifically related to the abstention piece.
Hi, this is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
This is a really delicate issue, I think, because I'm just trying to think it all through. I do understand the problem where you might have different constituents seeking different views. So under the current representation scheme, you could have, you know, one constituency blocking a move for consensus. You're going to have a problem with both ALAC and GAC not going to agree even to representing consensus, I don't think. I mean, they might pick three like-minded folks to attend this, but they cannot be said to be representing, I'm picking on the GAC here because they're the biggest target, right? I don't think they'll be able to even attest that they represent their stakeholder group or their advisory committee. So what are we forcing them to do to put their opinion in as non-voting in a way? I mean, what is their point in participating? I guess I'm getting to something more basic. It'd be nice if I, from my perspective, obviously you know where I sit on this whole fight. It'd be nice if we could just put brackets around them. And they could be listed as having a derogation and expressing a view at the bottom of the page. But I think we better sort this one out. What do they say they're going to be doing? I mean, the GAC has put forward the idea that first they wanted five, now they want three. I'm sure they don't want three just to watch, right? I'm not helping at all, am I?
Yeah, thanks, Stephanie. One of the things I think we should also keep in mind is that within the, you know, the expected membership criteria, we've stated that, you know, the participants have to be knowledgeable and respect the GNSO policy development process. We also say in the statement of participation, and this is a requirement that people joining this group sign up to, that, you know, that they agree to abide by, you know, they acknowledge the GNSO to develop consensus policies, and they'll abide by the recommended working methods and rules of engagement. So this isn't, in my mind, so much about what the GAC expectations are, but the expectations that we set on anyone that's participating in this effort. So if they're not prepared to agree, then, well, they don't participate. So, you know, maybe we're looking at it from the wrong perspective. Let's not worry too much about their expectations, but perhaps focus on what we expect. Susan, go ahead.
Thanks, Donna. I agree, especially with your last statement. Let's set the expectations. I think we've been telling GAC for a long time, look, we understand this is a complicated situation for you, but this is the multi-stakeholder system, and you don't outweigh every other community. So, And we've, you know, on the RDS working group, there was at least PSWG members on that. On the review team, Catherine, you know, doesn't go back necessarily in that. It's not set up that way to go back and really ask your community, but I mean, I do. I go back and consult with the BC on sort of recommendations we were thinking of. And so, Catherine does the same with her community, brings that, that experience into the discussion. And I think that's what we should require of them here. It's like, okay, you are representing the GAC. I'm sorry, that's hard for you. You guys figure that out. But this is a PDP managed by the GNSO Council, and this is the expected behavior.
Yeah, thanks, Susan. I think that's the way we should be approaching it too. Chase, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Donna. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And agree fully with Susan about the precedent that we've set. I've mentioned it several times about the GAC participating elsewhere. So I guess the question I still have is, sort of the differentiation between, you know, full members of the group, or liaisons to the group, or observers even. I think as it relates to the non-GNSO SOs and ACs, and so we've got GAC, ALEC, SSAC, CCNSO. We did not include RSSAC. I'm not sure that they would have a dog in this fight. Especially with all the work they've got going on. But in terms of an invitation, do we invite people, I think as we discussed previously, to either become a member or a liaison? I think that was one approach that we discussed. I think Heather mentioned that as a possibility on our last call. So I just think we need to drill down a little bit more about what we want to have as an outcome related to the non-GNSO groups. And then, you know, what's the justification for ALAC having one instead of GAC having three? I can imagine that could be, you know, a bone of contention for ALAC. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. It's a good point. So Marika's put up on the screen what the descriptions of the members, liaison, alternates, and observers are. So maybe if we can have a quick look through that. I'm conscious that it's 9:30 already, so... we probably, if we can wrap up this conversation in the next 10 minutes and then move on to composition, I think that would be helpful. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks, Donna. Stephanie, for the record. Do we have the ability to create a new kind of creature called an advisory member?
I think we envisage experts, which I think is referenced somewhere, Marika, I can't remember where, outside legal counsel and dispute resolution. But are you thinking something different to that, Stephanie?
Mm-hmm. I mean, observers is really too far removed. Advisors could speak, of course, but they would not be part of the consensus-reaching process. So that would absolve them of the need to reach consensus among themselves. And I'm just worried, while I agree with the way forward would be, hey, here are the rules, this is how you play, this is an expedited PDP over something that is extremely important. Yes, we had them on the RDS, but we weren't getting anywhere. I suspect the moment we started to get somewhere, we would have heard for them in full voice. And in this case, they have every reason to either want that EPDP to be set, the interim spec to be set aside, or change it. So I think the circumstances are different. Again, in the review committees, it's a lot easier. We're not talking about, you know, a live issue like we are here. So I don't want to set us up for spending a whole lot of time dealing with the approach to consensus. I think it's going to be difficult enough. So if we created an advisory type of participation where they could advise away till the cows come home, but not hold it up in any way. I think that'd be great.
Thanks, Stephanie. Does other folks have any views on Stephanie's proposal? I think it, I understand you're trying to get some clarity and overcome an issue, Stephanie, but I think it creates some confusion as well. This is a, it's definitely a tricky one. Maybe if we can just park that for a minute and come back to, because I see there's some discussion about, you know, recommendation of numbers for ALAC and GAC and CCNSO and SAC. So, Stephanie, I think from your group, the recommendation was GAC for 3 and everybody else gets 1. I think what Keith is suggesting here is 3 for ALAC and 3 for GAC. And then the CCNSO and SAC probably get 1 each. So do other folks have strong views on this one? Keith, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. I'm sort of thinking on the fly here. I do think that ALAC, let me just say, one of the principles I outlined in my initial thinking about this is that there probably shouldn't be one individual responsible for representing an entire group in anticipation of the extreme, you know, level of work that's going to be required over the coming 2 months, 2.5 months. So I'm thinking, so we understand GAC has its particular need. Maybe we have the other SOs and ACs at 2 each to allow for some redundancy. I know there's the allocation for alternates, but I don't think we want to be going through, you know, a regular swapping in and swapping out and going through a, you know, an alternate process, adding that level of just work, I guess, unnecessary work. So I'm thinking maybe 2 each for ALAC, SAC, and CCNSO to the extent that they appoint. And we got to remember, a lot of these folks won't appoint even the number that we allocate. Anyway, so that's just my out loud thinking. Thanks.
Stephanie,
new hand.
Thanks, Keith.
No,
Stephanie, new hand.
Okay, go ahead. No, new hand. On this, I'm sure my constituency, or my stakeholder group, rather, does believe in only one to try and keep the influence of those members down. Because, of course, well, let's take ALAC, you know, there are intellectual property lawyers in ALAC who might possibly represent the IPC view, for instance. However, if they were to use the extra numbers to present a balanced view, one of the reasons we need 6 is not everybody has the expertise. People have different expertise, and we need to pull in different people for different issues. Unfortunately, from my point of view, that may not be the perspective that others take on it. It certainly doesn't appear to be the perspective that the GAC is taking on it. So we are just setting ourselves up, in my view, for a lot of voices that are going to be difficult to deal with unless we make them non-voting or non-consensus contributing, if you understand my words there. Thanks.
Donna, this is Keith. Shall I go?
Yeah, sorry, I was talking to myself. Go ahead, Keith, sorry.
No problem, Donna, thanks. All right, so look, based on the conversations that we've had today, you know, the initial number that we had for each of the groups was 3. But with the change that we've agreed to today in terms of breaking down the CSG constituencies to 2 each, I don't think we can reasonably justify 3 each for the SOs and ACs. So I think my recommendation, perhaps to try to put a line under this, is to say, in order to ensure they are not single-threaded and to ensure some level of parity between our internal GNSO groups and the external groups, that we make the number two, with the exception of the GAC at three, because we know that they really wanted five. So I'm suggesting that as a possible path forward. And then I see Paul's hand.
So this is Paul. I think Keith's proposal makes sense. And as a practical matter, the real danger here is to develop something that then results in countervailing GAC advice after we send it to the board, which would be a super bad outcome. And so I do think that giving the GAC more than the other SOs and ACs might deal with the issue of them feeling, you know, underrepresented. So that to me, I have no problem with. And if it, you know, moves the ball forward, terrific. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. So Stephanie and Susan, are you supportive of that pass forward? So Susan's okay. So what we would have, I think, Marika, what the numbers you had are okay, but Casey's suggesting two for alternates rather than one. Casey, your hand's up. Your hand is up.
Sorry. Yeah, hold hand. Sorry.
Okay. So Marika, can you just put the numbers either in the notes in action, and then we'll, so people can look at that, and then we'll try to get agreement and move on. Stephanie, I see your hand is up. Go ahead, please.
I wrote this in the chat. It's Stephanie for the record. What about one member, one liaison? That would solve my problem, I think.
Might solve your problem. It might create problems for the AC itself. I'm not concerned. It might complicate it a little bit. What do others think? There's a full saying, too few. So can we agree on 3+3 for the GAC, offer 2+2 for the ALAC, ESAC, and CCNSO on the understanding that is an up to amount and that it is a not mandatory requirement? We need to make it clear that these folks do not have to provide anyone if they don't want to. It's just that, you know, in the context that a normal PDP would be open to everybody, we're just trying not to exclude anybody. So are we okay with that number? Okay, so Keith and Susan are okay. Stephanie, I know we haven't solved your problem. Maybe we can think about it a little bit more. But I think we have to move forward. Okay, Stephanie's okay. All right, so we can draw a line under this one, which is great. And maybe, Marika, if we can tidy this up and then circulate something to this four and hopefully get something out to the working group, to the full drafting team later today, that would be really good. So moving on to the next issue, which is scope. And it's probably the more challenging one. Keith, I might ask you if you can start this off, given you're the one that's probably been closest to it. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Donna. Happy to take a crack at this. I see Stephanie's hand is still up. Not sure if that's new or old. Happy to defer to Stephanie if she wants to jump in. Nope, see it going down. And so Susan was the holder of the pen for the scope section, but let me sort of, again, give maybe a high-level view to Panama, conversations in Panama, where I think we are today. So going into Panama, one of the topics was around, one of the scope topics was around the extent to which the annexes would be included in the scope of the EPDP. Okay, I think we came out of Panama with an agreement that everything in the temporary specification, including the references to access to data, is in scope for the EPDP, which has the timeline, the deadline of May of next year, but for the initial report, we're targeting Barcelona. So short burn on that one. There was discussion in Panama about whether the uniform access model and the laundry list of things that are included in the annex should be in scope for the EPDP at all. There were views for. I know that that IPC strongly thought that that should be in scope from the very beginning. BC, I think, as well, that there was some urgency about that. And certainly from the contracted party side, there was a recognition or a position that in order to complete the work on the temp spec, which is the part that has the deadline, we needed to segment the discussions around the uniform access model and everything else that's in the annex. So I think where we are today is a recognition, and I see this as a compromise position based on those two differing views, and feel free to jump in on this after I'm done, is that we have a recognition broadly, and maybe not helped by all, that it would be reasonable to kick off an EPDP with two phases, the first being focused on the temporary specification with the goal of Barcelona for an initial report, at which time the group would pivot to focusing on the things that are in the annex, essentially the uniform access model discussion and, you know, the GAC advice that's still in there and the other things that have been identified as relevant but not urgent or not required for the temp spec EPDP. So I think that's where we are today. I know there may be still some disagreement about that, but, you know, in the interest of moving things forward, I see that as the compromise position that basically acknowledges the importance of everything in the temp spec for the first phase, including the discussions around access, but rightfully sets aside the other components for a phase two, which will necessarily be informed by the work of phase one. In other words, discussions around a uniform access model as described by ICANN in their proposal simply can't be done until the phase one work is complete. So I think that is my understanding of where we are and where the likely path forward is. But let me stop there and see if anybody else has different views. And then we probably need to focus on the actual language of the document. Thanks.
Thanks, Kate. Susan?
Yeah, I just want to make a clarification. So the BC is not requesting that the unified access model be part of this deliberation because that's not referenced in the annex. That was something that came out afterwards. But we are, you know, we are holding to wanting to reference the language in the annex. So I understand that that is a, and I just put it in here, that is a, you know, an issue for the contracted parties and maybe NCSG. I just don't, you know, I'm stumbling through this because I just don't know, you know, what the distinction is. We've been using parallel and a second phase in some of our language. And I think the BC would be more comfortable with parallel, understanding that there are some gating questions, but second phase sounds a little more rigid in how that this approach to an access model and the criteria we need there. And the BC actually provided limited, trying to limit actually what this PDP does ensure that the technical aspect of this would be completed, and then there would be other work that needs to be done. So it's still a little
unclear to me where we're going with it.
Thanks, Susan. Just a question for folks, it's just a question. Is this something the phasing or the parallel or however this is managed, is that something we need to prescribe in the charter, or is that something that we could leave to the working team itself to decide once it starts to, you know, look at the tasks that they have in front of them? Is that something, how they manage that, is that something we could leave open for them to decide? So that's just a question I want to put out there. Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, Donna. So this is Paul for the recording. A couple of things. Just a real simple item, which is I think that the document itself doesn't contain the IPC comments. I got those into the scope document today. So I don't think in the next 11 minutes we're going to get there anyways, but maybe for our next call, the more updated version will show up. Secondly, to Keith's suggestion that this be a phased PDP, and to Susan's suggestion that this be a parallel EPDP. Both of those are interesting ideas, but we'd have to put something down on paper, right, to see what those phases or parallel tracks look like, what they will cover, and, you know, what happens if one gets across the finish line before the other. You know, essentially, what are the time frames? Do you hive off the phase or the parallel track that's done? Vote on that at council and send that on to the board. Are they dependent on each other? Those kinds of things, right? So, because nobody's going to want their part, you know, essentially, you know, one thing's rushed and the other thing's ignored. And then the other, so we'd have to take a look at it. If we could get some language that I could shot back with the IPC between now and our call on Monday, I think that would be ideal. I don't know how we go about getting that. And then to Donna's question about can we leave this to the the drafting team? I'm sorry, to the working group. You know, my only concern about that is that just like all the good stuff in there for contracted parties, that disappears next May if we don't have a new policy in place. There's all kinds of good stuff in there in the main text. Even setting aside the discussion about the annex, which we also want referenced. But even the main text has a lot of good stuff in there about access. And that good stuff also goes away in May. And so, I think we would want some certainty that access would be, looked at, not necessarily this, uniform access model or whatever that staff is proposing these days. But that the access issue would be looked at with the same speed as the other stuff in the text of the document. As far as the speed phasing or paralleling uniform access model or whatever, again, we'd have to look at what that language looks like to make sure that I understood, you know, that everybody understands what, you know, what goes into which stream or what goes into which phase. So it would be, maybe we could work on that back and forth by email or something like that over the next couple of days. I think that'd be terrific. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. And I think Keith is suggesting that, you know, that delineation and timeline of tracks is something that probably needs to put on paper. So I'm assuming that Keith is supportive of that. Stephanie, go ahead.
Thanks, Donna. Stephanie, for the record, I've expressed, I think, our views in my comments on this. I wanted to raise a few additional concerns. To the question of whether we punt this decision to the working group, I think that's probably not a great idea. I think this properly belongs in scope and we should deal with it. I'm just worried that we're going to, with a larger number of players, have this argument over and over again. And quite frankly, I'm not looking forward to having it with some of the less informed members because, well, I think that present company understands when I say that's implementation, not policy. I doubt that we will get that recognition from, for instance, GAC. I hate to pick on them. Secondly, I think I could live with the sequential proposal that Keith is offering, providing that first phase one initial report has enough meat in it. I do think we have to qualify that. I would hate to see a back-end loaded report like we had with the experts working group where, frankly, you couldn't tell what was coming out the other end by the draft report we discussed in Buenos Aires. And I don't think that's fair on an issue this substantial. I think we should absolutely play ethically on this committee. I'm committed to do that. That might even see me changing my position on the odd thing, heaven forbid. But I think we have to be clear about this. We have to have an interim report that has all the meat in it. And I don't want to see that, you know, a whole lot of shenanigans going on so that we can get started on the other one. I also think that under the, as Susan will testify from the RDS group, it's so hard not to get the ICANN community to start building something, to start implementing when they're actually talking about principles, that we're going to have quite a bit of work that will lead us towards a better understanding, and we'll have to keep pulling the reins and pulling it back to, okay, can we agree on principles before we start building an RDAP peer access system? So, you know, I don't worry that we're not going to have any discussion in this working group on the aspect of access, third-party access. So I think we should go with sequential with the understanding that fair questions about how it would actually work may arise and should not be summarily cut off, but that we have to get the first report out with the meat in it. And is that clear enough?
Yeah, I think so, Stephanie. I think that, you know, sorry, Keith, go ahead.
No, thanks, Donna. Go ahead, and I'll jump in.
Can I just clarify? I was not saying, as Susan has written in the chat, I don't think it was, I did not say that the EWG was unethical. I said that it was unfortunate that we didn't have enough meat in there. And then I went on to talk about our ethical standards for this one. I did not mean that to imply that the EWG was not ethical. So sorry if that was a conclusion.
If you look at the transcript, Stephanie, that is what you said. So I do appreciate the revision, but I do think we need to keep this to a higher standard for discussing this charter.
So this is okay. Keith. If I could jump in, and I just want to go back to one of the things that Paul mentioned just previously that I fully agree with, is that there are some very important parts of the temporary specification related to continued, you know, collection of data, transfer of data, escrow of data, and importantly, to Paul's point, the access to the data for a legitimate purpose. And that, I think, is the crux of the work that has to be done during this phase focused on the temp spec. But certainly one output or one outcome of the review of the temp spec could be an agreement or a certification of those points to say that those will continue, those obligations on registries and registrars enforced by ICANN to ensure access for legitimate purpose will continue until such time as an access model or whatever we're calling it, a uniform access model is complete. So I certainly think that there are important things in the temp spec that we'll all agree are probably, you know, worth retaining and worth confirming as consensus policy as we head into May. I think the question is, you know, what's the subset that is maybe perhaps the bigger challenge or where we have some work to do to fix it. But ultimately, coming up with these definitions of purpose and legal justification, you know, is really job number one in order to handle these issues of access, particularly in light of the most recent letter from the European Data Protection Board that came out yesterday. I mentioned it in the chat, but for those that haven't read it, we should make sure that we take a look at that for any implications to the work of this group. Okay, thanks.
Yes, thanks, Keith. And I think, you know, something that isn't captured in here too is that likely 30 days after this PDP starts work, the board, we can expect the board is going to confirm or, you know, maybe provide an amended temporary specification. And we haven't addressed that in any shape or form of how this working group would actually deal with that. So I think it's probably something that, you know, there at least needs to be a reference in the scope on that, I think. So I think, you know, we're at the end of this call now, and there's another one scheduled for Monday. Paul has suggested that, you know, within this group there'd be some back and forth to try to get down to some agreement on the issue. So I think we still have, Susan, if I understand you correctly, that there's some problems around what we mean by phases. Stephanie mentioned sequential, which might be a better term to use for it. So whether it's a case of understanding what needs to happen first before what the working group needs to understand before it can consider, you know, a number of other issues might be helpful. And I think Keith has identified that a timeline will, well, Paul's saying here, a straw man on the parallel phasing would be helpful. So maybe that's a starting point for, you know, the next discussion. And there's also the text that Paul has provided is now included in the charter. And Keith, did you intend to have additional text to add to this charter as well?
Yeah, thanks, Donna. And yeah, I had sent to a subgroup some language, some additional clarifying questions, I think it was, to the list. It was either earlier this week or late last week, but I don't think it's been included. So, yeah, we want to get those incorporated. And I think between these various inputs, I think we'll be able to identify where we have sort of commonality and sort of identify where there may be a couple of open questions or where we need more clarification, going into Monday. So, Marika, I'm not sure if that's something that you can accomplish in terms of incorporating what I submitted, also making sure that what Susan submitted and what Paul submitted are all incorporated, and then maybe circulate that document to this group. And then, you know, I'll take an action item to continue to look at that, refine it, and identify, you know, where sort of these, where these things need to be further delineated. Thanks.
Thanks, Keith. Susan, I saw your hand was up and now it's down. Did you still want to add something?
I noticed in the chat.
Okay, great. Okay. Marika, your hand's up?
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm a staff. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Oh, okay, sorry. Great. Sorry about that. From a staff side, we're happy to try and work on a kind of integrated model that encompasses all the different inputs. But I do know that there's quite a bit of diversion between, I think, where some comments are and views expressed by others. So that may be a bit of a challenge. So we can try to see if there's a way of maybe creating a kind of table in which we kind of map the different inputs and, then it may be up to the small team to see how to bring that together. I know, for example, the language that Paul suggested for the first paragraph, I think that already met some resistance on the call yesterday. So it will be hard for staff to kind of make a judgment there on what should prompt. So, but I'm definitely happy to at least put maybe, the three proposals in parallel. And that may then help or facilitate some of the conversations. I do note as well that there are other comments that were already made on the initial proposal. I think Pam, Aidan, I think Darcy and Amabe and others, I think Rubens as well, you know, provided some specific questions and comments on some of the original items and charter questions that were identified. So that is probably something that the group needs to look at as well. But as I said, I'm happy at least to build the package, but it may not be possible in a similar way as we did on composition to kind of you know, present you with a kind of compromise package, is that you know, some of the viewpoints are you know, seem to be apart, unless indeed there is agreement that you know, we work on the kind of phasing as Keith has outlined, and in that way try to integrate some of the specific comments and suggestions that have been put forward both by Susan and Paul.
Thanks, Marika. I think to the extent that you can provide the full picture in any you know, table or whatever you provide, I think that will be really helpful to this group. Certainly from a leadership perspective, I think, you know, this taking the next steps and trying to get to resolution on the scoping issue is now with this group of four. So, you know, any comments that have been made to date, I would think it's the group of four that has to take that into consideration and try to come up with a position that can be discussed with the full drafting team. So that's how I would think about that. Just going back to the composition, I think it's really important that if we can get that, you know, the group of four sign off on that today, and then we can get it to the drafting team. And yeah, I know. Well, you are going to be superhero ensemble, Paul, if we can get this over the hump. So I think it's important that we get the composition out to the drafting team today. So once Marika provides those notes, if you can sign off on it, that'd be great. So I think that's a big important issue that we've overcome today on composition, so that's great. So I guess we'll talk again on Monday, but hopefully there'll be some back and forth on email as well as folks start to think about, you know, what they've heard today and how we can possibly move forward. So thanks, everybody.
Thanks, all.
Thanks,
Rika.
Thank you. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.